right, welcome to Writer Stuff, Not That's Criminal. I should probably explain myself to you guys. Over the Christmas break, I decided to rebrand from That's Criminal podcast to the Writer Stuff podcast. And it's not that I got tired of talking true crime and talking crime thrillers and talking to thriller writers, but because I am a thriller guy. That's what I write. But I'm also a multi-genre author. I've written horror. I've written fantasy. Of course, I've written crime. And as I got more and more into That's Criminal, I'd find somebody that I thought, you know, I see this horror guy. I'm like, man, I want to talk to that guy. Or I'd see a sci-fi guy. I'm having a conversation. I'm like, I couldn't really justify being stuck under that, you know, criminal umbrella. And there is always like a cop element to most stories, but I just kind of felt stuck. So what I decided to do is just simplify things. Writer stuff. So let's just talk to writers. I find somebody that I think is interesting. I like their book. I like what they write. I bring them on to chat. No typecasting. So easy. At least it sounds easy to me when I think about it. So we'll see how that goes. Either way, it is awesome to be back. I'm excited. I got a good stack of writers coming to join me over the next couple months. And as of right now, since I almost caught myself during the intro saying That's Criminal, I think we'll take a count. We'll keep a count over the season of how many times I catch myself saying That's Criminal instead of Writer Stuff. But we'll see how it goes. And before we kick stuff off, I think we should probably catch up a little bit. So real quick, Overmatch, I was talking about that over the last season, and it was there's a couple different things going on. But over the holidays, gained a bunch of momentum. I made a couple decisions, one of which was I didn't feel like waiting on a publisher to make decisions on stuff. I didn't feel like playing around with the whole querying thing anymore. So I you've seen Jeff Hayes's cover on IG and Facebook and Instagram and Twitter or X, whatever it is. He knocked out of the park like he's done with the rest of my covers. Shelly at Ink It Out Editing, she cleaned up the manuscript to make sure I look good. And the agency reviewed and cleared, no redactions. And bam, we're now it's Overmatch is going to come your way March 1st. Ty Benhoff's second adventure, tearing across Indonesia this time. And I'm working on future. I'm already working on the future for him. I got an arc in mind, got another project that's going to come in the meantime that I'm really excited to talk to you about, but we'll get to that, over the course of the season. Those of you, who got an early copy, I can't thank you enough, for the notes of support that you've given me. Everybody, you guys really like that cover and I love it. So, can't wait until after March 1st to see what the rest of you guys think of it. On that note, I will have early copies of Overmatch with me, Amelia Island, Florida, at the Amelia Island Book Expo, February 24th. That if you haven't done that event before, it's a bunch of authors, some heavy hitters in town for that one. And if you're in the Florida, Georgia area, I hope to see you there, and copies will be limited for obvious reasons. That being said, let's get to tonight. Let's see who I'm talking to tonight. I'm talking to Joe Goldberg. Joe has been a CIA covert action officer, a corporate intelligence director, international political consultant, and currently is a college instructor and a writer. He holds degrees in political science and communications from the University of Iowa. In 2014, Joe self-published the novel Secret Wars, an espionage story, which was a finalist in both the fiction and historical fiction categories of the Independent Authors Network Awards. Currently, his current work is Spy Devils, the Spy Devils series following Bridger and his band of very interesting cast as they make their way across the globe, taking on missions nobody else can pull off and doing so in the shadows with some very interesting ways of getting even with people, and which I love. And I really like that team. So with that being said, Joe, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. Great to be on the new version of your show. Now I'm scared and I'm nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll call it growth. We'll call it evolution.
Yes. Right? Well, I mean, I was thinking because I'm on the, I do House of Mystery podcast, and that was a true crime mystery show. And I do all the thriller. I do a lot of the thrillers and other authors. So it's Al's been very good at being non-genre specific now. Yeah, so that's an interesting way to go.
And I know that I could have, like, that's criminal. That's fine. The people who listen, they understand. If I see something, I'm like a dog chasing a car. If it looks cool, I'm going to go talk to it. Right.
Right. Exactly.
But it's just easier. I mean, it's, it's just writers talking. We talk shop. So I was like, let's just keep it simple. Let's just.
Well, it's a brand too. So criminal could be criminal intent, could be a TV show, NCSI, but writer stuff, writers. Right. That's a good title and stuff. That's what you pick your topic. So I like it. I like that topic.
Yeah.
Change my name to writer stuff.
You can, I copyrighted already. Sorry. Yeah. That one's mine now. Exactly. As long as you keep it, as long as you, ownership is 9/10 of the law, right?
That's what they say. I'm not law enforcement.
And I'll tell you, I don't have the budget to get a lawyer to fight you. So if you decide to steal it, you probably got it.
You can have it. You can have it.
Yeah. I'll tell you an interesting thing. When I was doing our background, we're both from Waterloo.
You're from Waterloo?
I'm from Waterloo, New York.
Oh.
Birthplace of Memorial Day.
Yeah.
And since it is New York, and if we think westward or westward expansion, I got to think that mine came first.
Could be. I'm from Waterloo, Iowa, for those who are University of Iowa people. Well, Waterloo, it's named after Waterloo, the one, for some whatever reason. It was named another name. I think it was Prairie Rapids when it first came. And the reason I can tell you why I know this stuff, because I'm setting my next book in a fictional, I'm bunny earing right now, people, quoting in right here, Waterloo, right? So, and I've always known the history. I'm a history guy, so it makes life easier to just use your hometown or something fictionalized hometown for setting. I don't have to go out to worry about what I'm doing thrillers. If I'm in Australia or Mauritius or Nigeria, I try to pick places I've been, but still, it's easier to travel to Waterloo, Iowa than it is to Port Louis, Mauritius.
Yeah. And, or if your mind goes blank, or if your characters take you to someplace else, you're surfing Google Maps or Wikipedia's images, just trying to get a feel for some place.
Just for Texas. I can't go right now. So you gotta use what's at your disposal. And I've been a lot, it's like all writers, you kind of use the places you've been or you can't go. There's advice I got early from, it was Mark Graney or somebody who said, set your books in places you want to go on vacation. All right.
Yep.
I said, smart. Right.
Yeah. And we're back to the budget issues. It's like, I'd love to take a research trip to Bora Bora, but
right.
The upfront costs are a little prohibitive. Your next
book, the great cover, the fortune's going to roll in and you'll be able to get the jet and travel anywhere you want.
That's the plan. I've already got my G5 picked out, and the paint job is going to be sick. I was going to go Buffalo Bills themed, but I figured they'd have a problem with it. So I decided to go straight Green Lantern, and that nobody will see it coming.
You're a Bills fan. Epinesa, the Iowa player. I follow Iowa players, Iowa football players.
So yeah, cool that trauma's hard to get over. The 90s were rough. So it's
wide right.
Yeah. And then we did it again. And we did it again 2 weeks ago. It was
sorry, I didn't mean to rub that in there.
This is not going to reflect well on my parenting skills, but I woke my entire house up with screaming the biggest F word anybody's. I'm pretty sure my neighbors heard it. Like everybody's asleep, everybody's being good, and I'm like, mother
football, mother football. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that F word. Yep. See, clever writer, those F words, right? We got the source in our head.
Yeah, find a way to hide it. But man, that trauma came back fast. When I got a hold of Spy Devils, the TBR being what it is, I started with Devil's Own Day, and the team is just so much fun. I think it was the way they're, they got that tangible connection, but they work on their own, and they're just, I wouldn't call them misfits because they're all very skilled at what they do, but there's that misfit element that's so much fun, and there's absolutely no discipline whatsoever. Like Bridger's, I guess, in charge, but they tend to give him the finger anytime they feel like it, which is kind of fun.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're right on. Misfits was how I wrote them originally. I always said it sort of like John Wick meets Mission Impossible meets MASH. That was sort of the three mashups I did, putting these guys together. Yeah, you're right. And they're people characters that you want to relate to. I didn't want to have, I mean, Demon, who's sort of like the sociopathic, wants to kill anything that has a heartbeat, is funny. All right. And it's frustrating. And I tried to have him to be family-esque. You know, families don't get along. And the family has a patriarch and matriarch, and they don't, which the Spy Devils do, actually. And I want a relationship, which is why Bridger's main character relationship is with his mother. That's his CIA boss. That always sort of gets people interested. But I appreciate that. I wanted to have your bringing out the characters, because about good characters, forget it. I mean, and I do these podcasts and I write things down. It's like, if you ask everybody, where do you start, plot or character? And even those who say plot, they always come back to character. And like, you know, like, I know who John Wick is. Give me the plot of the third movie. All right. You know who John Wick is. If you really are, you really can do it. But you always remember good characters. What was the plot of Casino Royale? What was the plot in the book? You don't know unless you've read it 100 times, but you know James Bond. All right.
Yep.
And that's what's most important. So you try to build those characters. That's where I start.
Yeah. That's one of my questions. But I will, since you brought Bond up, who's the best Bond?
Oh,
given your background,
Sean Connery. Sean Connery. It's a given. I mean, it is what's fantasy, right? When I started into espionage writing the second time, when I started figuring out the Spy Devils, I went to audiobooks because I wanted to just fire them off. And I'm reading, and it takes time. You can't do it when you're driving to the grandkids 3 hours away. So I just burned through 100+ classic thriller or new thriller espionage books. And the Bonds. So I did the Bonds. In fact, James Bond books, if you read Spy Devils, they show up. That's kind of like the collection of James Bond books, and Bridger saves once again, paying homage to the original. But you got to learn from that, right? And so I listen. And when I'm listening, I can't skip. When I'm reading, you know, I'm distracted. My eyes skip down. They're talking about flowers and bunnies. Your eyes skip down till you get to the, and then he pulled out his Glock and capped, you know, shot the guy 3 times in the head. Then you're moving on. If you're listening to it, you can't skip, and you can hear how the writer is putting that stuff together. And sometimes it's good even just to have the book in front of you if you really want to do it that way, and read and listen along. I'm doing that right now with a couple of Harlan Coben books I'm using as sort of ideas for my next type of book. But I just went through these classic espionage, Bond, and I really like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. For me, is like the gold standard, or you could say it's Spy Came In From the Cold, but those for me are... I started up Tinker Tailor. I went back to do Dave the Jackal. I went back to do a few of those other ones that I feasted on as a kid and read all through time. Agents of Influence. I highly recommend Agents of Influence by David Ignatius. Write it down.
Yep.
It is fantastic, fantastic book. And, you know, 1970, actually kind of relevant now. It's Arab-Israeli-Palestinian relationships and the CIA there. And you know, different kinds of books. And I went to different genres. I went back to Treasure Island, one of my favorite books of all time. You know, and, you know, the action adventure style, just to get this, to feast on this. And that was through audiobooks. And that's how I started putting these things, the ideas together. And that's where the Spy Devils sort of came from. And actually the stuff I'm working on now, which is non-Spy Devils.
Yeah. I just reread Casino Royale last year. Same thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I wanted to get back to the classics. Like I had a run where I wanted to get back to what was the first detective novel. Like get just back to the guys.
15. I mean the first ones, but 39 Steps.
I'm thinking. You know, I look back and I'm like Holmes.
Holmes is my number one.
Oh yeah, by far.
Holmes. There's Poe, no greater character. Let me interrupt. You said Holmes. Okay.
Right. Oh yeah. No.
Holmes is by far the greatest fictional character of all time. We can fight this out. And if it comes to detectives, he's number one. Don't give me Hercule Poirot. He's nice, but that's
no.
But going back to you, tell me the plot of Study in Scarlet, of Hounds of the Baskervilles, of any you know everything about Sherlock Holmes because, and people believe he's a real person. They know everything about him. That is the power of great character building. Holmes is it. Study Sherlock Holmes.
And and for me, when it comes to it, no, I'm in the same boat. When it comes to me with Holmes, it was the story's great. And you know, when at the climax, when he lays it all out and just blows everybody's mind that he just figured this out. For me, when I'm reading those, it's the dialogue between him and Watson. It's the little bits between him and Watson, and seeing those two characters interact, and all the, if you read it, that character was so, for a Victorian era ish character, his time, like he's experimenting with opium and he's on the edge. I mean, dude is not a healthy man, you know? Yeah. And it's just the way that those two play off each other. I can inhale those books. I could sit down and disappear in them over and over.
Conan Doyle started forensic science for detectives, basically. I mean, he's the guy who made it, if not popular, sort of told people what to do. What came first, forensic science or Holmes or forensic? But all that was a doctor. All that came out of him. It's like, just for me, it's kind of like Treasure Island. All that stuff about pirates, you know, yo-ho-ho and parrots and patches, that's made up. You know, that was
Here
from a book, right?
It's still here.
Made it through time. That's exactly right. So that's power. That's the power of writing. And that's, you know, if you get lucky and make one or half of one, and I that's why the espionage books for me were like practice, although I wanted to make them good and get better all the time and develop those characters and make them realistic. I get a lot more comments on the characters than any sort of the plot. The plot's just there to push them along. And I got better. But now it's the next step. How do you challenge yourself? I know you challenge yourself in different genres. So, and flipping from one to the other, how do you go from science fiction to horror to true crime to thriller and all the different kinds of thrillers? That's how you test. I get better, challenge, whatever the word might be.
Yeah, and for me, it was, I got done with grad school, and I've said it before, but I got done with grad school, and all the time I put towards researching, you know, going in early, getting it done before my workday started so I can compartmentalize, I had an idea in my head, and it was a horror, dark fantasy thing. And so I was just, hey, let's try it. And then it was like, same thing you said. I was like, I start out with a story, and then I'm like, getting through there, I'm like, this is vanilla. I'm like, who are my characters? Like, the bad guy was a standard bad guy. And then my detective was a standard paint by numbers detective. And so I get the bulk done, and it's the first time I've ever done it. And I'm like, even I'm reading it, I'm like, this guy could be anybody. This guy could be anybody. So I have to go back and add the color, you know, and that evolved to eventually, 6 books in, I come up with Ty Benhoff, who took, you know, that 7-8 years to be like, who do I want to write? Like, who is this guy that I want to write? And all my characters would come, but Ty was the first one that I probably thought about for probably 4 years before I could come up with a story of where to use him. Like, I was just amalgamating this dude. And then I finally found a place to put him. And that's where Blood Red Ivory came from. And then it's like, where do you go with this character? Because by this time you're so invested. He's like, this dude's so much fun. Where do we go next? You know, and what do we do with him? Do we just stick him in a new adventure and just run him through? Or is there going to be growth? Is there going to be an end to his story? Or am I going to do 30 books of him strolling into town, saving the day, and walking back out on Sunset? You know,
Well, that's where the magic is. When you get that character and you go, this person is inside me and wants to be out. They want to say something, even if it's, I don't know whoever's listening. I got a guy, a person here who wants to come out. And I get a lot of, and I've sort of told people that this is the last Spy Devils for a while, although I set it up so if I really want to keep going, and I probably will. I mean, it's not going to be right away, but people like the characters. So if I do multitask or take a break from the stuff I'm working on, I'm just going to write some origin novellas, you know, write 30,000 words or whatever, and just do Bridger origin. Everybody wants more Demon. Everybody likes Demon. That's the only guy. Everybody wants Demon. I just got another review yesterday, great review from the bestseller books from other guys. And anyway, I get good reviews, which is nice. But always want more. If you read the books, want more. Mm-hmm. And everybody just says, I like the characters. I really like Demon. constantly. So, and I would write them in first person. And I want to, I'm writing my next book in first person. By the way, all the Holmes were first person, right? So, I don't want to write third person books anymore. If I do, I want them just to be little pieces. I want to get in, I want the characters to be talking to the reader. And I'm doing that now. And I really am enjoying it. And I keep finding myself flashing back in the third person as I'm writing, but this is my first time. And I got to get in. By the time I'm done with the 14th draft, I'll be fine.
But yeah, the point of view is the editor's thing. They catch us on that. They catch us on the editing, right? They switched again.
They have no sense of humor on that. Well, that's when you try to read a guy like Don Winslow who changes point of view inside a sentence. You're kind of going, how do you do that? And then you read it and you go, wow.
It works.
And what makes it work is unbelievable dialogue and setting creation. But yeah, you understand who's talking about what when from a point of view because you just know from talking and from where they are, but that's who it is. And yeah, you read Don, and I'll probably talk to him when his next book comes out, April, the last Don Winslow book. It's kind of hard to believe.
Oh man,
he's done. Yeah.
So it's you bring that up, and it's funny you say that because I've had the same not bouncing from sentence to sentence, but you know, head popping in a scene. It's like if you know, everybody, we watch movies and the movie perspective changes from in between scenes. You can get one character's perspective changed to the next. But you go to your editor, and if you're head popping in a scene and it makes sense to you, there's that firm rule of, you know, no head popping. And it's like, right. But what if it works? You know, I mean, I'm nobody. I'm not, you know, I've got people who read my books and they don't complain, but, can you head pop if it works? Like you're saying, can Don Winslow change perspective? Yes, he can.
You can do anything you want. All right. Yep. Well, that's not the convention. You know what? It's when you're cliche doing the convention all the time, when you don't stand out from the crowd. Just why I'm getting out of espionage, because you can only kill terrorists, narcos, nuclear biological threat, crazy presidents. You can only do that so much to it just totally. You know, the superhero who just never seems to get shot in the bad spot and gets blown up and falls out the window three stories and gets up and runs away because maybe they're limping just to, you know, pay homage to the fact that they fell out a window. Yeah. Blah. But there is a huge and great market for that of people who I won't call it escapism because they're excellent books. I'm talking to Mark this next week on his new book, but you know, it's great stuff. And these great authors can find the new angle, the twist, they develop their characters over time. I don't know if I'm that guy. I really have a bug about this new thing. In fact, I'm writing a female protagonist on purpose.
Yeah.
And so that gave me a little bit of angst, so you're reading around. I'm doing a lot of books and movies and things, males writing females. And I went to this conferences and went to the seminars and they're talking about it, and pretty much goes back to your comment. There ain't no rules.
Yeah, there's no rules. If it works, it works.
Yeah, you don't want to be misogynistic. You want to be stupid. Like when they're checking their lipstick in the mirror and crap like that. But you know, I check my hair when I'm going by the mirror. Some people do that. That's just their thing. And sometimes it happens. It's not there because you're trying to say, oh, women worry about their big. This person does.
And there's that thing that as long as you write it honest, it's a character, women get the right men.
What? Yeah.
Yes. You can't really do it without it. You know?
Yeah. And I did a lot of research. I think it was Terry Pritchard, going back to your fantasy world, who said, I don't write female characters. I write people. And I've written that's up here on my wall. All right. I don't write female characters. I don't write characters. I write people. And that is a great thing to remember. And if you're listening and you're a writer, don't write a female character. Don't write a bad guy. Write a person. Because bad guys don't think they're bad. Right? Bad guys are doing what they like best. They think they're good. They think they're doing whatever they do. They don't know they're bad. They're only bad because you have somebody else to bounce off of them.
And people who carry their identity on their sleeve and make sure they show you what the flag there is they're flying, nobody wants to talk to those people. They're annoying. People are just people.
Yeah. And some people, and we need the spy devils. We need those mm-hmm. escaping. And who is to say that they're not based on reality? As if you read them, the main character writes the foreword. Okay, he
talks about me. I really like that. I've not read that before, and that was. Yeah. I opened it up and I'm like, yeah. I've never seen that before. I was like, that I enjoy.
Yeah. King Solomon's Mind. I stole that from King Solomon's Mind. But so I asked, hey, do you want to write the foreword? And so I got the, if Bridger's real or not, you decide. So that personalized right away, he's talking in first person and then it clicks into third person immediately. Because I want every book sort of has a theme. I can't just write action. Underneath it all, there's a theme and relationships and hope and people developing as people, that type of stuff. And that's built into the action. You got to have the action, right? As Joshua told me once, if you ever get stuck, just kill somebody. Right? That was his advice. So write that one down too.
Exactly. And I wouldn't want to... I wouldn't want to take, I know like when you're feeling a story, the flow is so much better, but I will say this in, you know, as I'm reading Spy Devils, you know, the different ways that they get back at people, whether it's exposing them on a social media or embarrassing them or just, getting them, the time I'm reading this, like in the back of my head, I'm like, when do we take Bridger and his team and turn them loose on DC? Like just anybody, any Senate confirmed government employee and any elected official, you turn those dudes loose. I mean, maybe leave the pliers in the back pocket.
The rusty pair of pliers in the back pocket. They're
We're not going to torture anybody. We're not going to assassinate anybody, but you know, digging dirt and spilling it all over social media where most of our hired officials and politicians, I think that could do some service.
There's just the journalistics world is supposed to be shining the light into the dark corners of people's lives. And that's what the Spy Devils do. That's their main weapon.
Yeah.
For those who didn't
read. And I love it. Yeah.
They find the bad guys and their first weapon is to make film, video, vignettes, and they put it up on the internet, social media, and they show, here's the bad guys doing bad guy things. And they pretty much shuts them down. That they don't shut down, of course, and the Spy Devils go pliers. But I teach social media at community college. In fact, social media is at the core of my next book. I teach these topics. I'm like, you know, there's a book in this topic here, and it's very contemporary, and got to do it right because you're going to get hit with the, I'm going to say partisan, the us, them, the political spectrum. I'm a political scientist by trade, and you can't write to that. You can't write and cancel yourself at all. You know, you got to write to the character and write things, and people respond any way they want. And I'm sensitive to that, and I'm succumbing some in my own lack of confidence in sometimes taking things out, not saying what the character really would say. Saying, "Oh, someone's gonna be mad at me," and I go back and change it. I get a little bit more forceful or confident in this. But you know, when you're talking social media and instant communications and all that sort of stuff, this is like what I teach. I teach misinformation class. You got to decide belief, truth, and opinion, and use it. And that's what I'm trying to do in the book.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm on social media solely because the contractual obligations with a publisher. You know, have a presence, build your platform. That's what they say. We got to do all that. But any dialogue within those platforms instantly just devolves. And then when you look at most of the people who are, you know, you see somebody with a comment that is purely built, which is 90% of them purely built just to spark a fire. And you look at them, they're following 5,000 people and they have 70 followers. It's like, you're a bot. You're a bot.
Well, depends
who
they are. The bots.
It's just, you mentioned, you've got the intel background, and every time I'm on there, I'm just like, this is nothing but a misinformation campaign. I don't know who's in charge of it, but it's all it is somebody's IC just disrupting all of society just because they know that we're suckers and we'll do it.
Some people want to watch the world burn. I teach that in class. I show that clip in class. Right? What's people's motivation? Some people just want to watch the world burn. They want to put it out there. Some people are trying to do good. Some people are trying to inform, and it's up to you to be the sieve and decide what's good. When you see the bad, call out the bad. You may not want to go trolling, because if you call out the bad, then you're going to get bombarded. There's, you're canceling yourself, right? You're canceling your own speech. They've succeeded because you don't want to go after them, because you don't want to be attacked. But you can tell your friends if they forward something. Hey, by the way, this isn't true. I do that all the time. I had to just train my wife in some sections. Don't. Did you check this out before you put it out there? Well, this isn't true. You may want to check it before. And I got her. And that's what I teach my classes. I can't stop it. But if I can inoculate you with common sense and skepticism, as opposed to cynicism on these topics, it's victory. And go out and tell all your friends the things that you know to get a little bit better. And hopefully we can knock some of this down. But it's over. I mean, I say it's over. I mean, you can't stop social media. You can't stop whatever it does. And you just gotta be sensitive. And that's kind of the social media is a tool in my next book too. Not a good tool. And I want to make a, I might comment on that, but I want to, is it can be used? It can be good used as a weapon. And it's more of a weapon now. I think we're good.
It is. And I also think it's just a symptom of growing pains. You know, our generation thought it was cool when we could, you know, connect a dial in and listen to the AOL chirps and shut down. Yeah. Aunt Pat couldn't call for an hour because we were on a chat board. Right. And so we thought that was cool. And then, you know, Facebook, it's like, oh, okay, we're all connected. This generation just thinks it's fun to fight, and everybody wants to be an activist, and everybody thinks they have to be in some kind of, you know, rallying cry and be fighting the good fight. And eventually everybody's going to get tired of it. And everybody's just going to have a good time. And those voices and those bots will, my optimistic opinion, they'll get relegated to the trash pile, and everybody else will just have their stream. But I think it's just an evolution of our electronic world. I mean, social media just attacked us and it's flooded us. And now, I mean, you look around any given restaurant and 70% of the people aren't even talking to each other. They're just doom scrolling. Yeah. It's just the way it is.
It's only been around for 20 years. Facebook was basically 2005. Yeah. I was at Motorola in corporate intelligence, and the CFO came to my office and put his feet up on my desk and said, "Tell me about this Facebook thing." I go, "What?" And then I said, the Facebook account I have now is a Facebook account I opened that day to learn about, because they want to put Facebook on phones, mobile Facebook. I can't even imagine it.
Crazy.
It's 20 years ago, 20 years, you know, less than 20 years. So, because they didn't come out like 2005, 6, 7, you know, they sort of gotten a more smartphone. But, you know, that's the last thing, in infancy. And, you know, my class are college students, they're digital natives, they grew up on this. And I take a survey at the beginning of every class, every semester, about the usage of digital media, usage of social media. And just for the point of view, platform, it was Facebook and Twitter 7 years ago. They don't even know what those are. Now it's TikTok. There's no number. TikTok, YouTube, some Instagram. And they're on it for hours and hours. But I am seeing in the data I've collected over time now, it's exactly what you're saying, the decrease in belief or use of social media, especially their college students. But since they're all been college students, as I've been teaching, I guess they have sort of the same environment that they're working in or living in. And they're seeing the split up, the breakup of social media big platforms, right? So the Discords and the Twitches and that gang will become the communities that people will flock to. And so we'll see. This could take a little bit, but it's happening now, the breakup. But we broke up the telephone system and it put itself back together. So that's just the way things go.
Yeah, people are herd animals.
Big things do big things. Yeah.
It's funny. I have a funny side note. You mentioned, you know, the evolution of Facebook, and I tried to put off social media, but you know, as with the job in law enforcement, we needed it because everything migrated there. All the gossip, all the dirt. People can't help but, you know, take selfies in their stolen cars, waving their stolen guns. It's like, okay, we have to get there. So the day came, and this is before the office even had the machines, the white machines, the untraceable machines to go off and, you know, anonymously search and stuff like that. So I go home one day and I create a fake profile, fake name, fake date of birth. Well, no, real name, fake date of birth, because Facebook would get you with the fake name thing. Fake date of birth, email address I never plan on using, fake location of fake hometown, fake college. And so I do it at my thing. I go cyber stalk my people and I use that for my case and forget about it. Right. So probably 2 years later, I'm on deployment on the other side of the planet. And as I'm Skyping back then, I'm doing air quotes again. Skype doesn't even exist anymore. I'm Skyping with my wife one night and she's like, yeah, I got this question. People are asking, like, what's your Facebook profile? And I'm like, I don't know. She's like, well, I found this one. She's like, I found this one. People aren't sure if it's you or your dad, but the date of birth is off. Like it says you're from, you know, Pennsylvania and all this stuff, but there's a, you know, I think it's you. And when I pulled up Facebook on the browser, it popped up. I'm like, huh. She's like, so that one, I'm like, yeah, that was me. It was for work. She's like, well, don't worry about it. I fixed it. Like, what do you mean you fixed it? She's like, well, I just, you know, I filled everything in. I just made everything, you know, you. I'm like, awesome. And I'm like, that was great. Thank you for doing that. And you know what the first thing was that she changed?
Handsomeness?
Relationship.
Close. I was married. In the ballpark. Yeah, married.
the handsomeness, I took care of myself. I just made myself a 10.
Yeah, you put some other baby, but Tom Cruise's picture on you as your profile picture.
I think it was Fabio adjacent.
There you go. The blonde wavy hair. Yeah, I see a blonde wavy hair. But
that's right.
But the thing is, how do you make social media? How do you make this relevant for the book for people to read? They're living it in their lives. They don't want to be. They want to escape. You know, book rule number one: it's entertaining, right? So you don't want it to be a chore. You don't want it to, but you want to feel the tension. All right. So I'm reading a lot of contemporary books and there's social media plays. I mean, how did movies, books, or anything occur before cell phone, mobile phones? I mean, you can't write a book, you can't make a TV show without the detective, the whoever, flipping open the phone and calling the person from wherever. And the plot moves on, the story moves on. The old days, you got to find the pay phone or you had to go somewhere. So it's picked up the pace and it's sort of become lazy writing. You know, I don't need to do this or make action or setting. I can just have make a phone call and go someplace else.
It's the same way with a bunch of the cases. Cause it used to be, you know, you'd have to, you know, in the crime thriller, you got to run over here and run this lead. You got to run that lead, you know, track down records, track down this, go talk to your source. And you know, now it's like you can pull up this database, pull up that database, pull up that database. It's like, it's like sometimes you just got to cut technology at a point where they're actually out of their desk and actually doing something. And it's the same in the real world. It's like you can't solve a case from your desk. Go get out, talk to people. That's what we do. But it's tough.
No, yeah,
Harry, get off your ass and knock on doors.
Yeah.
Yep.
Another set of books are really, I always did the first book, the books I listened to. Well, and that's kind of like, as I told you, I said, getting into sort of new area of thriller. And it's easier to make the spy devils because it's all fan. It's all, well, it's, you know, it's fiction, right? It's fiction. You don't need to necessarily go, unless you're setting research, go talk to your characters. They don't exist, right? They're in your head. They're maybe based on people, but you know who you're basing it on. In this current thing, I really feel obligated that because of the topics, I need to go talk to people who've experienced this or work in this field. And of course, you can do that in fiction too. If you're writing about nuclear science, go talk to a nuclear scientist. You want to talk, you're talking about truck drivers, you got to talk to truck drivers. You can do that, but you can also make it up. It's not critical. It may give you some nice gristle and people go, oh, it's so realistic, but that's two sentences, right? What is that? Right. Baldacci does hours and reams of research for four paragraphs. I'm more of a minimalist kind of research as you're going along, but I feel the need to actually talk to those human beings. And that is, you know, more journalistic, right? I'm not a journalist, but I did work in communications and politics and campaigns, but I feel it that if you're going to grab people and be entertaining in these types of topics, some of these more psychological or real world topics, not bang, bang, shoot them up topics. You got to talk to human beings. You got to get out, get off your ass and knock on doors.
Yeah. So
that's where I am.
And when you do that, you've got, you get the context, you know, for, okay, I need an engineer to explain to me in this book how this little widget works. And, sure, I can read, you know, I can go on Google and I can go play around at, you know, Raytheon and see what they've got to offer and tell me some, right, you know, read some research papers. But you go talk to an engineer or talk to a scientist, those, some of the, I've been in conversation with some of those people and I'm like, I'm not evolved enough as a human to understand what you're telling me. Right.
Yeah, like, you speak at a different, right?
Yeah. You speak at a different level that I've ever been trained at. And that, when you have that interpersonal experience, that can translate to that. Even if that character only exists for a paragraph, there's granularity there. Right. And you mentioned, you know, that, the technology and stuff, so as an experiment, I wrote a high fantasy. I did Die Hard in a Castle. And as part of that, my family grew up as kind of horse people and truckers. So those generations rode horses and understood it. And I fell off horses and I stopped doing that about 8. So I don't know anything about horses.
Legs so and tail.
Yeah, exactly. They like to bite. They can kick you really hard and they like to go fast and throw you. That's all I know. So, but to write this, you know, this back medieval period, I have to know horse terminology. I need to know, you know, clothing, like tack, all that stuff. So I spend a whole day in researching this stuff just so I can write a couple pages to get me from one place to the next. And I'm like, that's nuts. Right. Yeah,
but
on the flip side. Yeah. On the flip side, like we talked about earlier, I got the vibe, like you said, for your current project, I just got a vibe to go sci-fi. And I've noticed, you know, I have to figure out, how does this ship work? How do you make it across these giant distances? How do you chase bad guys across a galaxy, so to speak? Like, and as I'm writing it, what do phones look like? What's our connection presence look like 200 years from now? And I'm always thinking back to that day I spent learning about horses to, you know, it can be whatever I want it to be, because I'm making all of this up. This world doesn't exist, never has existed, and there's no reference for it. So I'm like, how does this work? This is how it works, because I just said so. It's like, yeah, it was very freeing to get a brand new genre where there is absolutely no palette whatsoever. It's been a blast.
Yeah, you can go Dune, which is a whole new world. You can go Asimov, which is sort of a whole new world, or you can go Andy Weir, you know, The Martian and Project Artemis, which is real world. And the science in those is deep, but it's so understandable, relatable. It's important, but it's not, and he explains it, right? Explains it in a way you kind of go, okay, this is, now I know why this is important, but it's not making me shut my brain down. He's the master. Yeah, mm-hmm. I went back and read The Martian, and is it to a couple of his other ones to see how he took these complex things and related to them. I mean, if you haven't read those books, that's kind of like science fiction. And I told you before, in my spare time, I have a couple of science fiction ideas. I think I'll make them non-New World. I think I'll make them like contemporary, like science fiction on Earth. Contemporary, like. Thing, but it's a different mindset, it's a different writing. And so I've got a stack of science fiction short stories I'm going to read to see how the greats did it, Bradbury and Asimov and that crowd, and see how and read the current magazines on Hugo Award winners to see how what they're doing now. And I'd rather do that research than go talk to a theoretical physicist, which my brother's actually a theoretical physicist, but I can talk to him. But we'll talk some. If I need to know some atomic particles, I'll do enough some atomic particle research to get me through the day. And then I'll go back and rewrites. I call it the barf draft. Just barf it out, get it on the first thing. I'm on my barf draft right now for the new book and just get it down. It doesn't make a difference if you know how it works. It's not important.
Yep, that's what every morning is like for me. Every morning is word vomit, and then once I wrap the story up, then I'll go back and go line by line. But I think as mine's going through, you know, like you mentioned Andy Weir, and I always go by what Elmore Leonard said is, you know, people skip, you know, people don't write the parts that people skip.
Right.
And when you said Andy Weir, it's like I read every word of Martian, and I think the second one is Artemis, where he's Artemis. Trying to save the planet.
By the sun, they're hopefully make that into a movie. Supposedly they are.
Oh, man.
I heard that Bradley Cooper might have bought it, but I don't know. Don't hold me to that, but that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how they do the alien, but the alien was so distant. It was the best
special effects.
well, it, just his concept for it was so foreign to what you see in a book. Because, you know, we always like the Star Trek ones. It's like they might have six arms, but they're basically humans in a mask, right?
Which which Rattenberg had to explain, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. But this thing was so foreign that even as a reader, you're just like, I don't know how this thing exists. And I can't wait to find out. But every time he's getting scientific jargon, you're just like, I need every second of this to understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And that's a superpower. You know,
well, I grew up with Roddenberry. I grew up a Star Trek fan, original series.
Oh, me too.
I recorded that. I tape recorded them back in the day with Sony tape recorders. I can memorize all that. I mean, you got to learn, right? And it's nuts. And everybody's calling you a geek and sort of stuff. But you know, you can quote Star Trek later on down the road. That's if you're the phrase I've used from teaching intelligence. Doing intelligence in my class, in the first day class, I say, if you want to succeed in anything, you've got to be insatiably curious, right? That thing has got to come along and you're going to say, I need to know more about that. I am not fulfilled. I'm not filled until my curiosity on that thing, I'm closer to being satisfied or I'm satisfied. I got to know the answer. I got to know more about it. And that's what you want the reader to do, to be insatiably curious about how the book ends, how this character survives and what happens to them. And that's how I'm trying to think more about how I wrote. It's kind of how I wrote the Spy Devil characters. You want to know sort of where they came from and how they get along together and how they get out of these crazy situations, which are not necessarily that crazy, but they're tough situations, and keep those personality traits that you talked about at the very beginning intact without just becoming cliche. And I actually make fun of it as I'm writing the first draft. I say, he didn't want to be the cliche, you know, bar bouncer or whatever it might be, and you know, tough leather jacket, short hair, Deezer and Dozer. That's a cliche. It's lazy, right? I don't like lazy writing. I hate lazy writing.
Yeah, and it's the more they care about the characters, the more they're going to keep going. And you know, in Spy Devils, you've got those hangers. Like you've got Milton and
Beatrice, his wife.
Milton and Beatrice. They've got that thing on the outside that they're not, you know, you're not going to find out about that. The team doesn't even know. So even the team has these hangers. And I don't want
to believe it in anything. It's more than anything.
And I wouldn't want to give away a spoiler, but there's a point in the book where they're like, you know, we're here in this, you know, we're here in this meeting and we're honoring two people that most of you don't even know their real identities. And it's there it is. Yeah. All those questions are all out there for the readers to be like, where does this dude come from? And you're like, you can think about it. I'm not telling you.
It wasn't until Devil's Own Day, the last of the three, where I started throwing out real names and they're all looking at each other like, that's your name. That's your first. No, you're not. You're not that.
You're not one of those.
Develop character. Book three, develop characters. They grow. So if I want them to grow and I want the reader who, if they've been, you know, they're loyal enough to read the third book of a series, give them a new piece of a character, you know, reveal, like we all do in our own lives, marriages, whatever it might be, reveal who you might be. And the situations that they're in have made them show themselves, right? Like Imp, the cliche 20-year-old tech guy.
Right.
Okay, I did it. The 20. But he's slightly different. A little bit attitude-y. He's actually, of any character in the book, is really based on a real person. If the other ones aren't, I will neither say nor deny whether they're based on real people or not. Imp is more than anything a real person. I actually told him, I actually named him sort of after the real person. But those are just learning the traits and the techniques. Right.
Yeah. And I've been playing with that with especially Blood Red Ivory and Overmatch. Just you've always got that overarch part of a story, you know, that omnipresence, so to speak, where, okay, this is happening. The characters have no idea this is happening. And I'm just like, why do I want my readers to know what's happening if my characters don't know what's happening? So I want you just to see it through the information that these people have, because they don't have what they need. And I want you to feel just as angsty about it as they do. So as this story unfolds, it's really hard to have the dynamic between the antagonist and protagonist, because you got to show what the antagonist is doing, because the protagonist is going to be a reaction to the incident. But it's a really hard time sometimes keeping that perspective and not giving it away and keeping your reader just as in the dark as your character is. And it's, I played with it. I don't know if I'm pulling it off, though. I guess they'll tell me in March 2nd when they start reading Overmatch. But it's I want to limit that knowledge to the reader base as much as my character has it. And that's a very hard thing to kind of pull off.
Oh, absolutely. That's an astute thing in that comment. And let's say writing something new, I'm dealing with that because in the action adventure, bad guys got the bomb. It's going to go off. We need to stop from going off over here. But there's very little sort of trickeration. Now in true crime, who did it? You know, let's develop the case. And in the end, you figure out what all happened so that happens. So I am also in the same boat of, I've got a conspiracy theory. It's called, for lack of a better phrasing, and our my hero, she steps into it. So how much do the conspiracy theory do I tell the reader and although I'm writing in first person, I'm sticking in some third person chapters, much like Kristen Hanna does in a lot of her books and Corbin does. And so that gives the reader a little bit more than what the main person knows, but how much of that do I give away until she knows that she's in this, all right? Yep. And that she's being manipulated. So I'm still scalpeling that one out, and I'll take 14 revisions or whatever to get there. But that is astute. That's a hard one. And if you do it wrong, the reader is going to go, you know, next book.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, try again.
Let's go find a real writer.
But yeah, try again. So much for time on me.
Right, shame on me for not doing it better, but also hooray for me or us for trying it and getting to the next step. Right, the next one will be keep going.
Yeah, and when somebody reads
in the face,
yeah, and if somebody reads our fail, they'll come up with a better idea. You know, so that whoever comes next will actually nail it. You know, if we don't, so
well, read the bad books or read the books that kind of go get the half reviews and you kind of go, why did this one not work? And they say, that doesn't work, or you don't want to read bad books. But and I don't want to read bad books. I look at reviews like we all do of the book that I want to read. But you just know, or you hear, this is a book that I might be interested in. So I download it or buy it, I see a mini series made out of it. I go back and buy the book and see how close they are. And and you say, that didn't work. That didn't work. Yeah. Why didn't it work?
Right? Yeah. What happened? What happened there?
Why didn't I like it? But that's just me too. So I don't know. We're not really talking about writing and I'm rambling, but there's no, I guess this goes back to one of your very first things. You know, there's no road. Agents want to get clients who can sell to publishers. So the publishers don't do a lot of work to sell the book quickly so they can make a lot of money. All right. That's the business end of it. Right?
Yep.
That's, you want to write a good entertaining book, which is the next To Kill a Mockingbird. Right.
Yeah. And some so people like, yeah.
And so that's where the two forces of nature slam into each other. I'm writing To Kill a Mockingbird here. Who are you to make me try to make a commercial?
All right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You want me to dumb it down? It's like, it might be kind of dumb already. I don't know.
Picked up. You're not, no agent wants you because this isn't, you know, I keep saying, you know, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, it'd be tough to sell in this current market. How many people die? One of two that are actually talked about that. Other talked in the flashback or in the past dying. No booms, no gizmos.
Yeah.
All right. It was an internal thought process of espionage and how people deal with it. So I'm like, boy, would that sell today?
It's a sad statement you just made that, you know, the cerebral books don't really go far. I mean, everything is physical. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter what genre you're in. It's all boiled down to pro wrestling. Like, if you look, you go to see a movie, any movie these days is basically a pro wrestling match. I mean, every superhero movie is literally pro wrestling.
It's well, like, you look at Gray Man that was made into Netflix. You know, that's not the book. All right. It's lots of action. It's a character sort of there, the irreverent sort of character, but that's not really the book. And why not? You know, why not use the original Gray Man books? There's kind of some elements in there that do pertain to it, but it's, you know, they didn't just take the book and turn it, you know, here's the next chapter, here's the next chapter, like they did for Maltese Falcon. Every chapter was basically a scene of the book because it wrote itself. So, yeah, writing and styles is not linear. Okay, mm-hmm. Everything is cyclical. So I think the espionage genre is on the way down, if it's not there already. And what will come back will be the more cerebral ones, which is why I tried to start Spy Doubles that way. I wanted to be more cerebral. And of course, I got I need some more action here. It's like, so much for cerebral. So I stuck in the bangs, the booms, and the bang bangs, which took away the idea of creating a more cerebral book because it didn't pass muster. Right?
Yep. Yeah, but the strategy.
It'll come back.
Yeah, those strategy books, Clancy's first books will come back. Right. The strategy. I mean, there was always the action elements, but the action was not the driving force. It was it was the background. It was Jack Ryan sitting around talking about how do we do this, you know?
Geopolitics.
Yeah.
And how they interrelate to each other. So, but everything, life, world, time, it's a cycle. It's not a straight line. Why are people talking about this again? Because it never went away. We cycle back to what we were talking about back in the post-Civil War, post-World War II. It's back, right? And that's the way it works. So can you catch the wave of what's coming back, right? I was trying to do that with Spy Doubles, but they got commercialized a little bit and didn't do it well, or whatever the word might be. And so in my current stuff, I'm trying to marry some things, but I'm jumping on the contemporary bandwagon. I want to sell. I want to be part of Oprah's and Reese Witherspoon's book club.
Right.
Yeah. I want the cover to say soon to be a major motion picture. All right. That's the goal. Yeah. Plus entertainment. At some point. Right.
I got to tell you, this one. The world is starving for content, and the team, the Spy Devils team, is made for an Amazon series. I mean,
all right, it's so just, let's get to that.
The ensemble part of that is just built for it.
I have written the TV treatment and draft, and it's in review with people who know, but it's been delayed for various personal things. But I wrote the TV treatment back in December after about four or five. I had to finish Devil's Own Day to focus. I can't do two things at once. So I finished Devil's Own Day sort of in October, November. So I started working on the TV treatment, and I haven't written the episode guide yet. I want to see what I had, if what I had was in the right track in the marketplace, but I am going to launch. And I've heard that a lot, which is why I did it, that Spy Devils is set up as a video. My degree is in broadcasting and film, and I'm a video guy. So, and I see I'm one of those see writers, not hear writers.
Yeah, me too.
Feel writers, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that. I've heard it, and I don't know, with the frustration or whatever, the anxiety to get to, how do you get from where it is to where I need to be? And I was on that train, but it's been derailed just a little bit, which is fine. This is the way life goes. When the time comes, it's time we'll cycle up. And I think there always will be a market for the Spy Devils kind of book, because they go back and they make the Night Manager, right? They go, and what's the one of, not Nick Petrie, though, the old man, all right?
Yep. And I mean, if you look at it, it's a, you know, I don't want to simplify things, but it's a nuttier version of the A-Team, right? With a more enhanced plot. You know, you've got Misfits, it's not as, you know, A-Team was a disc. It was the D-I-S and C's working together. You've got more, and they're more colorful, you know?
Yeah. Sarcasm and dark humor. That's what keeps them. That's what keeps the team together, and they need each other, and they're the only family that they have. And so there's these bonds that are, they don't want to see broken, because they know if they're broken, what do they have? They're really good at these things. And they're basically young, except for one or two. And so those characters are there. There's spinoffs there. The three books sort of almost kind of not wrote themselves. I had to put them in places. But the characters, people are interested in them. So that's why I go back to this novella idea. Just publish them in ebook. There's nothing big. Just get them out there and do them all in first person. So you're hearing from the character. But that's, I do appreciate, and it just raises my anxiety when you say that it's an Amazon series, because that's what I've been working on. That's exactly the other thing besides this book that I'm working on.
Yeah, and I think you'd have to look at Amazon, because you put anything on network TV and it's so vanilla and the heart's peeled out of it. And then Netflix, like you said, Netflix kind of makes it caricature of things.
Depends.
You know, the actors, I think they perfectly cast the Gray Man. You know, they perfectly cast Cars Guy. The production parts, the executives get in charge. The executives get in there and just want those commercialized little pieces and appeals the heart out of things. And Amazon's the one that I see being the most true to a story, you know?
Yeah, I went down.
Except for Without Remorse. They butchered Without Remorse. Oh, well, I was very upset.
Forget it.
I was very upset with that.
So the idea is, do you have something entertaining? Do you have believable characters? Do you have a plot that pieces them all together? Can the reader envision them? And do you like them as a writer? Mm-hmm. Once you got that, knock yourself out.
Yep.
You're going to waste your time, spend time 3 months, 6 months, 8 months living with these people. Make them somebody that you want to spend time with.
Yeah, you got to like them. You got to at least enjoy them. And I've been keeping you about an hour, and I know it's a Tuesday night, and I appreciate it. And I'm gonna let you off the hook in a minute. But since we were talking, I have two more questions. Since we were talking Bond and Connery is your guy.
Yep.
Is The Rock with Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery, is that a Bond movie?
I very much like that. Yeah, why not? I mean, it's entertaining. It's good. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, that's the best part.
But you have from the good characters and the broken character to the nut job characters to the, oh my gosh, new revelation, what have I done characters? You can see that. Now it's pieced together in this sort of wacky way. Some movies come on TV. I turn on when Armageddon's on, I watch it, boom. You know, it's like Shawshank. It's automatic watch. Yeah, God, why
is it's on.
I gotta watch it. And so I like The Rock. It's I always kind of have, because I liked the characters, and he liked Sean Connery.
It was the character. Yeah. Sean Connery drove that movie.
Well, if you wanted Sean Connery, then he'd go to Finding Forrester, which is a fan. It's about writing, right? It's a fantastic book, fantastic show, movie. And if you haven't watched it, go Finding Forrester. And there's so many great, you know, he did the first draft is for what? For show, the second draft is for agents, whatever it is. You know, it's like just get it down, get your thoughts down. It's just excellent. It's about writing. He's J.D. Salinger.
And that's the name I was stuck on. But yeah, man, it's been a while since I saw that movie. But yeah, just sitting that kid down and making him write till his hands bleed. Yeah. The last question I got for you is, you know, your time as a civil servant, your time serving the government.
Yeah.
I ask the same thing of anybody who has that servant lifestyle. 17, 18 year old kid today trying to figure out, you know, how to best serve his country. He's thinking about the CIA. It's thinking about CIA, the intelligence community as a whole. What would your advice be to him?
I would say, well, first of all, do it. If you have the feeling that you need to do it, go do it. And if you want to be patriotic, and I use this line all the time, heck, when I raised my hand, I it was 1985, September 30th, 1985. And you know, not everybody raises their hand and pledges allegiance to the Constitution to defend the country and to provide the foreign policymakers the correct information to make good decisions about the foreign policy of the United States of America. Not many have done it. And if you're inside the agency or some of the other ones, it's hard to get in. It's very hard to get in. If you've been selected and you can raise your hand, that will stick with you forever. Aim for that moment, because that moment becomes, is a life changer. Yeah, is it going to be hard? Are you going to hate it? Is it lonely? Is it all those things? Is it frustrating? Is it bureaucracy? Is it all that? Yes. But in the end, you rose your hand and pledge allegiance to defend the Constitution of the United States. And that's something you should always stick in your pocket and say, I got that. You don't.
Yep, absolutely. That's well put. Yeah, the ups of the ups and the downs can be way down, but at the end of the day, you got a lot to look back on. It's a good way to spend a life. I appreciate your time.
I got out. I had a family thing. I got out.
Yeah. I appreciate you spending the time with me. And I've got JoeGoldbergBooks.com. Facebook, Joe Goldberg Books. You keep it consistent across the board.
So just go to JoeGoldbergBooks.com. You'll find it.
You can't go wrong.
Except
you Twitter. Can't go wrong there.
I can only be Joe Goldberg Book because the S is the extra length.
That's just too far. You ran out of characters and
growl.
Nice.
Of course. Nothing's easy in life.
That's right. There's always a catch. But Joe, I appreciate you coming on. And any other time you wanna come join me, just you reach out. And good luck. Good luck with the new project.
You keep me posted. I'm gonna reach out for some advice from you because you got some background I need to have for my next book. So we're now best buddies. Let's make ourselves best selling authors, and Oprah Winfrey and New York Times and USA Today and all those other guys. That's
that sounds good. I'm into that. And feel free to make me a technical advisor when Amazon calls.
You'll be absolutely.
That's good. All right. Thanks. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.